Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics. This is now our second hour of the program, where we're going to turn our attention to God and consider what He had to say based upon what He actually said. But before we turn just to considering His perspective, there's something that really is a derivative of the first hour of the program that I think will help us transition into this segment of the program, is this thought that we were talking about all of the bad behavior that was existing in these Islamic countries, particularly with the rash of suicide bombings and terrorist acts. And today, if you do a comprehensive study, and I did it for 40 years. I began in the 1960s, and I think I stopped in about 2004. And I studied and wrote about every terrorist act that was perpetrated anywhere in the world. And what I found is that with the resurgence of fundamentalist Islam, that Islam went from perpetrating about 10 to 20% of terrorist acts in the 1960s, with Yasser Arafat and his PLO being dominant among the Islamic terrorists, outgrowths of the Muslim Brotherhood, to by 2004, 99.9% of all terrorist acts were perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. 99.9% of terrorist acts were perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. It is by becoming aware of this information and about making the connections that we are able to understand, therefore, that the only rational conclusion is that the problem is Islam. The same thing can be true if we're willing to open our eyes and think, even as Mitt Romney said a couple of days ago, talking about the cultural differences between the flourishing areas influenced by Jews in Israel and the areas that are so impoverished and hopeless in the areas controlled by Muslims in Israel, and that there is a huge difference in the culture that is fostered under Judaism versus the culture that is fostered under Islam, where in Islam the highest and best deed one can do is to commit jihad, killing peaceful Muslims and killing non-Muslims in the cause of Allah, where in Islam the 8th surah begins by saying stealing is lawful and good. Allah has condoned stealing for you. And so the difference between those cultures is so extreme that we see the obvious conclusion in terms of poverty and hopelessness and uncivil behavior in the Islamic world. But when Mitt Romney brought our attention to that, the Muslims and the press, which likes to ally with them, had a conniption fit, as if the worst thing that a person could possibly do is point out the obvious so that people could make rational connections and therefore understand what was influencing their world. Well, it is interesting, and this is why I wanted to use this as a transition. It is interesting to know that Yahweh, that's God's name, is extremely interested in us making these kinds of connections. There is nothing He wants more for us than for us to first to be observant so that we come to know, because without information we are useless. We are, in fact, to use his terms, for lack of knowing, you are destroyed. Ignorance is not bliss when it comes to God. He wants us to observe his testimony and the world so that we understand the contrast that he is making for us, so that we observe, so that we know, and then he gave us the one thing that makes humans unique from all other animals. It's called a nasalma, a conscience, a seat of judgment, where we can then make these connections and differentiate between right and wrong, and that thereby make conclusions that lead to understanding. And then once you understand, you're in an extremely powerful position, because now you can respond appropriately. So God wants you to know that the primary purpose of his Torah, which means teaching, means guidance and instruction, is to direct your attention to the terms and conditions of his covenant, so that you choose to participate. At the heart of the Torah is the covenant. The covenant is singular. There's only one of them. It has not yet been renewed. And when it is renewed, according to Yahweh, it will be renewed with the total incorporation of the Torah inside of us. Now, you may wonder why, if the Torah is so wonderful, why God wouldn't just reaffirm the covenant now by writing his Torah inside of us. And the reason is because the prime directive, which is the covenant, requires free will. The moment you no longer have the ability to corrupt God's testimony, to ignore God's testimony, to be confused about God's testimony as conditions exist today, particularly through religion and politics, then you no longer have free will. Then your participation in the covenant, your participation, your acceptance of Yah's Torah teaching becomes absolute, and we no longer have choice. And without choice, there cannot be a loving family relationship. The covenant, as a loving family relationship, requires choice. And if God were to write his Torah inside of us now so that we couldn't ignore it or corrupt it, we would no longer have choice. But he can, when he returns, write his Torah inside of us, because when he returns, at that point, everyone will have made their choice. Everyone will have either chosen to accept his terms and conditions and embrace him, or they will choose to either ignore him, which would be atheism and agnosticism, or convolute him, which would be the nature of all religions, where they create a caricature of God, or overtly oppose him. And so at that point, all of us who are going to endure with him throughout eternity would benefit from having his teaching placed inside of us. Now, it's interesting. The Torah that will be placed inside of us is Torah with a lowercase t, not the capital T Torah, which comprises what we think of as the first five books, those books which were scribed by Moshe. And the reason it will be the lowercase t Torah is because it is going to be God's guidance, his teaching, his directions, which will enable us to express free will throughout eternity, but with our increased power and ability, not mess things up. I mean, there are things that we're going to need to know about the inner workings of our universe that will enable us to go off and explore it without doing harm to it and ourselves. So God, more than anything, wants you to understand, which means you need to know and then think and then process that information so that you understand each of the five things that you must act upon to engage in a relationship with him. Equally relevant, it is Yahweh's hope that you come to appreciate the reality that salvation is a byproduct of the covenant and not its primary purpose. This is something we're going to talk about a lot. The notion of Christianity is that the goal is to be saved. That is not God's goal. His goal is not to save. His goal isn't even to save everyone. His goal is to engage in a relationship with those who have taken the time to come to know him and who have embraced the terms and conditions of being part of his family. Those who do are saved by those very codicils and benefits of the covenant. You know, this notion that a being that created the universe is going to want to spend his eternity with someone who didn't even bother to get to know him and had no interest in availing themselves of his offer, that he would want to spend his eternity with them, is utter nonsense. It is only until you come to know God, come to like him as he is, and then you accept the offer that he has received, that he will save you. Now, as I have mentioned, we will focus a great deal in these programs in the second hour on prophecy. And the reason we're going to do that is because precise predictions, which consistently materialize as they were written, serve as the means that Yahweh uses to prove that we can trust his testimony as it is revealed in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. God not only proves his existence through prophecy, he proves beyond any reasonable doubt that he inspired the testimony that we are going to consider. It's simply a matter of probability. It's making a connection between the prediction and the fulfillment and the proof that the prediction was in writing and available to us long before the fulfillment occurred. And realizing that there have been tens of thousands of these very precise predictions, all of which have come true or are in the process of coming true precisely as they were predicted, that leads the rational and informed person to a singular conclusion, that God not only spoke to us, he not only revealed himself to us, but that he proved his existence. No faith is required. No belief is required. If you're an agnostic in particular, then you are in the perfect position to come to know God, because in your case, you're not even going to have to reject all of the religious myths that have separated you from him. But as an agnostic, this is my promise. If you listen to this program, you will come to know for certain that God exists and that he inspired the testimony that we are going to consider, because he proved his existence by consistently and accurately reporting in our past, our future. Very few things are as important as coming to that realization. Because once you do, once you understand that logic dictates the conclusion that he inspired these words, then it becomes extraordinarily important to consider what he had to say, particularly when what he had to say is in conflict with what religious institutions have to say about him. God's singular goal in creating the universe was because he wants his creation to come to know him. He wants his creation to engage in a relationship with him and to understand the path that he has provided to his home, so that we're in a position to trust it and rely upon him. Now, you might say, why in the world would God create this universe and as flawed a creature as we are in the midst of it? And the reason is that to be alive, to grow, to be infinite, God had no other choice. The only thing that can cause God to grow is the same thing that causes us to grow when we marry and have children. And through helping our children grow, through nurturing them and guiding them and protecting them and nourishing them, we all grow through those experiences. This is the way that God grows. It's the one thing that God cherishes more than anything else. We'll return to our presentation of Yahweh's testimony after the break. This is Shattering Myths, 877-300-7645. To Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics and engage God on his own terms. It is interesting that finding God in the Torah is so contrary to the teachings of the Jewish, Christian, and Islamic religions. Most simply reject this possibility, choosing instead to cling to the misguided tenets of their faith. Now, when I say that finding God in the Torah is so alien to us today, and I mention Judaism as one of the culprits, so many people listening would immediately react and say, "Wait a minute, I thought that Jews were Torah observant. Isn't the Torah their book?" No, the Torah is not a Jewish book. It does not belong to them. It is not their teaching. It is Yahweh's book. It belongs to him. He gave it to us, all of us. There is only one Torah for Jew and Gentile. But the reason that I make that statement and include Jews in it is because religious Jews are infinitely more focused on the Talmud than they are on the Torah. They view rabbinical interpretation and rabbinical arguments as being vastly superior to Yah's testimony. As a matter of fact, what they refer to as the Talmud, they believe are arguments that were based upon oral instruction that was handed down at the same time that the written Torah was given to Moshe. And of course, Yah begs to differ and says that is absolutely untrue. But truth has never been an impediment to religion. As it relates to Christianity, Christians will say, oh, we've got the Old Testament in our Bibles, so you can't tell us that we are opposed to the Torah. Well, why don't you read the half of your Christian New Testament written by Paul, and his letters are overtly opposed to the Torah. And so in Christianity, the Torah has been miscast as being law when it is in fact teaching, and it's miscast as having been annulled and unable to save when in fact it is the only source of salvation, and according to Yahweh and Yahusha, it will endure forever. Even in Islam, Allah would constantly brag that his Quran was confirming the Torah. But in fact, the Quran is the antithesis of the Torah. All one has to do to recognize that Islam is false is to compare the Quran to the Torah. And since the Quran claims to have affirmed the Torah, the very fact that it contradicts it in every possible way proves that Islam is false. That's why I say that it is impossible to be an informed and rational Muslim. The same thing true, by the way, is true of Christianity. When you compare the writings of Paul, who is the founder of the Christian religion, to Yahweh's Torah, they are in such conflict that it is impossible to be an informed and rational Christian. These religions require faith. For the religious, the sad truth is that God's word remains insufficient to free them from their beliefs. In fact, the onslaught of irrefutable evidence and unassailable logic, which God provides, continues to be squandered on those beguiled by man's religious schemes. Jews disregard Moshe's eye-opening proclamations in favor of their Talmud's mind-numbing rabbinical arguments. Christians disregard Yahusha's Sermon on the Mount in favor of Paul's hopelessly conflicting epistles. And Muslims disregard the fact that Muhammad's Quran is the antithesis of Yahweh's Torah, even though Allah's most basic claim is that his book confirms that which it consistently contradicts. Sadly, most of those seeking God will be precluded from finding him because of their faith. A thorough investigation of the evidence pertaining to mankind's presence in the universe and to an accurate understanding of God leads to an inescapable conclusion. The scripture Yahweh inspired, his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, remains the world's only rational candidate for divine inspiration. Now, I don't expect you to concur with me or with Yahweh in this regard, seeing that you are now just listening to the opening prologue of a presentation that will progress over the course of several years. But I have no doubt that somewhere along this journey, those of you who are intellectually honest will render a similar verdict. Frankly, the case Yahweh makes on his own behalf in his revelation is so compelling, I'm amazed that most people continue to stumble in the dark. Well, I look forward to returning with you on the other side of the break as we consider Yah's testimony, his teaching in his Torah. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Should you wish to participate in this conversation, our number is 877-300-7645. I have a promise to make to you, and that is that by listening to this program, you're going to find that much of what you have been led to believe isn't true. Religious founders, clerics, and politicians have deceived you to empower and enrich themselves, most knowingly, many purposefully. It isn't that everything they say is a lie. It's that so many lies have been blended with the truth that what's left is more poisonous than beneficial. And there is nothing more beguiling, more destructive, or more deadly than half-truths, deceptions which have been crafted to seem plausible. Well-crafted counterfeits fool even those who, they are particularly effective at fooling those who are not aware. And while counterfeits are absolutely worthless, because of the nature of a counterfeit, they appear genuine. Now, this is the essence of the religion of Christianity, for example. Christianity did not emerge from whole new cloth as an entirely new religion. Christianity instead is a counterfeit of Yah's testimony. Now, just as with a counterfeit bill, the bill is drawn to look identical to the real one, and yet it is the differences that cause it not to be identical that actually make it worthless. Religion as counterfeit appears to have value when it instead is not only worthless, it is illegal. It has no legitimacy whatsoever. Now, so that you might clean your mental slate and be properly prepared for what you are about to hear, understand that it is absolutely impossible, for the religions of Christianity, Judaism, Islam, or Mormonism to be reliable. It is impossible. So it's not a matter of opinion. It's not a matter of faith. It is absolutely impossible for the religions of Christianity, Judaism, Islam, or Mormonism to be true. Each claim that the, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, that the Bible is the inspired word of God, and each draw their authority from it. And yet each of these religions conceal, change, convolute, openly contradict, criticize, curtail, and counterfeit the very testimony they claim was inspired. Therefore, if Yahweh, who is the author of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, if his testimony is true, then all of these religions are false based solely upon their variations from God's revelation. But if Yahweh's testimony is untrustworthy, then they are unreliable as well, because these religions claim to represent what would then be an unreliable deity and an unreliable text, a reality which completely undermines their authority and their credibility. It is therefore impossible to be an informed and rational Catholic, Christian, Muslim, Mormon, or religious Jew. You cannot be religious unless you are either ignorant or irrational. Now, I understand those are pejorative terms, and they cause a lot of people to squirm. Ignorant means you do not know. Irrational means that you do not think logically. The only way to be a Christian, Muslim, or Mormon, indeed even a religious Jew, is to be ignorant of what God said and to be irrational and unwilling to deal logically with the conflicts between what he said and what your religion teaches. So no matter how your religion makes you feel, no matter how popular your religion may be, it cannot overcome this simple rational exercise that we have just considered. It is impossible for your religion to be true. Now, if I'm a bad guy because I'm telling you that your religion is false, then your perspective is upside down, since it is absolutely certain that your religion is false. There is nothing more compassionate that I could possibly do. Because for someone to know that the bridge over the gourd was falsely designed, inherent failures in it that will cause those who trust it to die, and not to warn those headed off across that bridge because there are great trumpeters on behalf of the bridge saying, oh boy, that faith, put your faith in the bridge, it's reliable. If you know that it is false and you do not warn people, then there's something deeply wrong with your morality, something deeply wrong with your judgment. And so rather than the critic of religion, of these unfaithful paths, being hateful, they are indeed loving. When I wrote Prophet of Doom, which is a wholesale condemnation of the Islamic religion, it uses the Islamic scriptures to expose and condemn Islam. I open that book by saying this is a gift to Muslims. It's the single greatest gift that I could give them, is to expose to them the reason they should not trust their religion. This review of Yad Eliyahu is primarily directed at those of you who are Christians. And exactly the same thing holds true. It is the greatest gift that I can give you, is to demonstrate for you that your religion is false and that you ought not trust it, and that as parents, you preclude your children from being harmed by it as well. We have a caller now. This is Richard from Washington State on the line. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Yada. How you doing?
Good. Yada, for those that don't know, is the name that I'm using for this program. I use Yada as opposed to my actual name, although I'm not hard to figure out who I am. For two reasons. One is I'm trying to dissuade ad hominem arguments. If someone wants to criticize something that is said on this program, I'd prefer them to focus on the issues as opposed to me as an individual. And second, for those who have known me for a while and know that I wrote Prophet of Doom, having 1,000 death threats causes one to tend to be a bit cautious. What is your question, Richard, or do you wish to make a statement?
I just wanted to remark on what you were saying about it's impossible to be a rational, informed Christian.
Yes.
I have a son who's a Christian minister. It just broke my heart when he told me he'd become one. But there's a sister in our forum that was actually told this by a Christian. They told her, no matter what truth, facts, or proof you give me, I will allow nothing to shake my faith. And I thought, boy, if that doesn't say it all.
Well, Richard, your summation here in that particular statement is the one that really hurts me the most. And it is exactly what I have experienced. I have received tens of thousands of emails from people over the past 10 years by way of making my books free. And what I have found is that if a person is religious, that no amount of evidence, no amount of reason is sufficient to shake their faith. They are impervious to it. And for a person to make that kind of a statement, that's saying, you can absolutely prove that my religion is false, and yet I'm going to cling to it.
Yeah.
Now, why would anybody, the normal line is, why would anybody in their right mind do that? No one in their right mind would do it. That's the consequence of religion. It's why religion is extremely good at being bad, because religion causes its victims to be impervious to reason.
It's what Paul said in James Smith and Jehovah's Witnesses did all this. He said if anybody says anything different than what I'm telling you, they'll be accursed. There's
always Correct.
A threat there, and it keeps people from... It makes them too afraid to think.
Yes, it is the ploy that Paul used. It's the same ploy that Muhammad used. It's the same ploy that rabbinical Jews use. That if you challenge them, that you are satanic, and that there will be a curse directly associated with you for challenging them. Now, what's, of course, is interesting about this program, Richard, is that what we're challenging Christianity, Judaism, Islam, based upon the comparison between their teachings and the teachings of the very God they claim that their religion is based upon. And even the testimony, the written testimony of the God they claim to believe isn't sufficient to dissuade them from their religion.
Richard,
So when you tell your, is it your son-in-law that's become a minister or your son?
My youngest son.
Okay. When you tell him that that there was no one named Jesus, much less Jesus Christ in the first century, and that the actual Messiah Yahusha did not start a religion, what is his reaction to that?
He doesn't believe me. He just, you know, we communicate through email. We never speak. He's down in San Antonio and I'm up here in Washington. But we communicate through email and everything is about, you know, Paul. He got into the ministry because his father-in-law has been a minister in, on the East Coast forever and ever, you know, and my son used to be a, I'll knock you down at the drop of a hat, you know, and he met this young lady and she converted him to Christianity. And he stopped drinking and doing all that and became a fine family man, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did 10 years in the Marine Corps and got out because he wanted to be a minister.
Yeah.
And so he really idolizes, you know, his father-in-law because I was a jerk of a dad. And so he idolizes his father-in-law and believes him. And I have little credibility with him. But I pointed him to your works and also, you know, to my own website and stuff. And he... It's like, I can't be bothered to read that. I know what I believe and it's right. It's frustrating, brother.
Yeah, that's frustrating. You know, one of the great misnomers of Christianity is that Christians have been beguiled into believing that that Jesus Christ created a religion and that they are followers of him. Richard, if you can hang on, we come back from the break. We'll pursue this because there is a myth that needs to be shattered here. This is Shattering Myths with Yada, 877-300-7645. To the final segment of Shattering Myths this morning. We were speaking with Richard during the last segment where he was shared something that ought to be alarming to people, which is that his son, who has become a minister, either directly or indirectly shared a line from a Christian which said that no matter how persuasive the evidence is, no matter how rational the logic is, to demonstrate that my religion is false, I will still cling to my faith. And during the break, Scott, who's the producer of this program, shared an idea that he thought might be the reason that the religious are unwilling to question their faith. And Scott, could you share that with us?
Well, I was just saying that basically they hold on, they build the religion into who they are, and that becomes so much about who they are that when somebody challenges it, they tend to get scared, fearful, because that's who they are. And if somebody tells you that who you are is a lie, you might be insanely fearful of that.
It's a beautiful point, and Richard, I'm sure you've run across the exact same thing. There is, then that's one of the things that I wanted to convey in this program is that yes, it must be frightening for those of you who are religious for me to have just proven that your religion is false. But I'm here to tell you that if you're willing to reject what is false and listen to and then come to understand and accept that which is true, rather than giving up something, you're going to gain something immensely more valuable. That it's just like you build a house on a foundation of sand, and that sand is unreliable. That's religion. You don't lose anything when you recognize that the foundation is false and you replace that foundation with one which is true, dependable, and reliable. You gain, you don't so much as lose. Richard, what's your impression of that?
I would tend to agree with that. I think a lot of it is we're so afraid to I know when I was, steeped in Christianity, I was afraid to accept what I was hearing about Paul and everything, because it meant that not only was I wrong and I taught people wrongly, but everybody I knew, mom, dad, uncles, aunts, sisters, brothers, were all lost. And it was scary. And I had to decide, well, I love my Creator better, more than anything else. And he's taken me and guided me into the truth, because I don't care about this world. I had to just adopt the attitude, I don't care. I can't care. I'm not going to let myself die because they want to die.
Yes. Now, it's interesting here. What Richard is saying is that while coming to embrace and understand and respond to Yah's offer of his covenant is the source of life eternal and being adopted into God's family, those who choose to reject it because they prefer to rely on Paul, for example, or Muhammad instead, their consequence of doing so, if being lost in this way, is simply to die at the end of their mortal existence. There is no torture. There's no eternal hell for these people. But you come to realize somewhere along the way that the truth that you're now embracing from God is so much more liberating, so much more empowering, so much more enriching than the old lies that you previously had embraced, that with each step of the way, you gain, you lose nothing other than rubbish, and you gain the most valuable treasure in the world. It isn't disorienting, and I'm sure that's what some might think at this stage of the game, but it's not the least bit disorienting. Having a proper foundation, gaining the proper perspective, is one of the most stabilizing and reaffirming and reassuring things in the universe. And when you do, what you'll find is that everything begins to make sense. As I have said before, Christians have been beguiled into believing that Jesus created a religion. Not only was there no Jesus, Yahusha was anti-religious. All of his testimony in a religious context was to condemn religion. And when Christians say that they're followers of Yahusha, not a single Christian is a follower of Yahusha, because Yahusha was Torah observant. And since there are no Christians who are Torah observant, there isn't a single Christian on the planet that is actually a follower of Yahusha, or even of the caricature Jesus Christ. The whole mythos of Christianity is based on a complete lie. Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our program today. Richard, I'm grateful for you having called in. Thank you. I hope you do so again. Thank you for your statement, Scott. We look forward to being with you at this time tomorrow, where we will continue to shatter the myths associated with religion and politics. Thank you for listening. This is Yada.
Many Americans suffer from digestive problems, often totally unaware they're not absorbing essential nutrients.